always look on the bright side of life.
Always hey, welcome back to Extra Feature Interview. I have to apologize to our guest. I have a really bad sore throat today, but I'm going to do my best, and I promised him we would do it tonight. So welcome, Mark A.C. Brown, to the show.
Thank you very much.
Your film Guardians, what, just came out last week, didn't it?
Yeah, we had our we had our U.S. premiere actually in September, but it was only a one-off film festival screening, and we've had our U.K. premiere last week, and we've had a few screenings since then.
So, how did the U.K. premiere go? What happened?
It was stressful, but it went amazingly well. We were meant to have one premiere, obviously, because that's what a premiere is. But we ended up selling out in 4 hours, so we had to book a second one, and then the cinema upgraded us to a bigger screen for the first one, and we sold out both of them, and then so we decided to have a third one, a local screening, and we sold that one out too. So it went from small to big, and was very good.
That's
very
awesome. Happy. That is really cool. I think
I was very happy.
Did you have a Q&A during each one of them?
Yeah, we had each one had a Q&A. We tried to get someone different each time just to make it interesting for ourselves, if anything.
So you had a different actor each time then?
We had a different host doing the Q&A.
Okay.
No, it was the same people on stage. It was the same cast and crew. The ones who were there anyway, they weren't all the same, but yeah, the principals were all there.
Oh, wow. So you have my favorite principal, the lawyer, I guess, the guy that runs the house?
Mike, yeah, he was there. He wasn't there for the local screening, but he was there for the first two. Yeah,
he's a funny man. He makes me laugh.
He's like that in real life. No, but not like he's not like the character, but he talks a lot and he's very very funny in general. And he's just started work full time writing jokes for the BBC this week. So he's happy as well.
Well, that's good. I want to start off with your location because you're pretty much a one location film.
Yes.
So where did you find the house? Or is it called a flat? Or just correct me if I'm wrong.
It's a house. It's a house. It's my house.
Oh, really?
In fact, if you... I'm in it now. Yeah. It's my fiance's house. It's in the Docklands in East London. It's a five-story Georgian townhouse, 203 years old. So all that is true in the film. And she bought it some time ago for not a lot, and it's now worth a very lot because it's massive.
So the whole house, so the backyard unkept when he makes comments, you're actually making fun of your fiance?
Yeah, I mean, we did very little set dressing, to be honest. We just moved a few things around, but that is what the house looks like.
So you actually do have a scary basement?
Yeah, I wrote the script around the house.
Oh, that's funny.
So the hole in the basement is a hole in the basement that we have yet to fill in.
Well, I have to ask, because these are the questions that came up. I'm like, where did they find a hole in the basement? Now,
the hole in the basement is because my fiance likes to do all her own DIY. And so she decided the floorboards were not as good as she would like. And so she pulled several of them up. And then she realized it was a harder job than she anticipated and stopped doing it. I just left a big hole there for a few years.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a legend like that.
That's great. Okay, you start the film off with a close-up on your main star, and you're on a train, and just sort of taking your time, you have music. It takes a long time for talking to start, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Are you setting the mood that he's lonely and we're supposed to feel for him? That all starts at the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, it's sort of a wrong footing sort of thing of, you know, a lot of silence at the beginning and it looks all kind of normal. And it's also about him having wanted to show the size of the area that he's in, you know, with Canary Wharf with all the big skyscrapers and the Limehouse Basin, which is right next to it, with all the boats in and everything. I wanted all this space because the second he goes through the door of that house, you know, he's pretty much in that house now, and the space is kind of get smaller and smaller as the film goes on in a way, you know.
It is very lonely. Okay. I found your film very English. I don't know if I'm stretching my limit here, but I found as a Canadian, it was, I had to think a lot more than I normally do when I watch a film.
Oh, that's a good thing, surely. Yeah, I mean, it's a very English film. It's very East London, I guess, because it's very much about that area. But at the same time, I would hope it would be thematically universal, and there's enough silly jokes and stuff to please the universal people of the world.
Okay, fair enough. I wrote down the lawyer is a dick. Is he supposed to be a dick?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's well the agent guy. You mean the Mike?
Yeah, the agent. I call him the lawyer because he's always streaming stuff off.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's kind of a sort of an amalgamation of all the estate agents and law that are kind of sort of trying to take over London, really. The gentrification of an area, you know.
Yeah, awesome. Great. You use more music, a lot of music with no lyrics.
Yeah, it's all originally composed by Joel Barmer, who this was his first feature film. And yeah, I was looking for someone who could bring something a bit strange, a bit interesting to the project, and he was introduced through a friend, and yeah, we hit it off, really. He just kind of took direction well and brought a load of stuff to the table that was I really liked, and yeah, so it's... I did want, originally, to have a few more kind of known songs in there, but they're expensive, and it just didn't really work with the mood of it in the end.
So... did you give him direction on the music, like saying, I'm going to shoot this and I want this kind of sound, or
did that more him? Yeah, it's, I mean, he watched the film and he came up with a lot of ideas, but I had specific sort of tones and themes that I kind of wanted to get across, because it's kind of a sort of multi-genre film, you know, it starts off as like kind of a sad, odd couple kind of thing, and then moves into a tiny bit of a ghost story, and then into a bit more action CG kind of thriller comedy. So he had to kind of jump through a lot of hoops to get through all those themes, you know.
Now I have to ask, why a Betty Davis film? Because it's free?
It wasn't actually a Betty Davis film. I just said Betty Davis because I was reading a book about her at the time.
Oh,
the film on the TV is actually a short film shot by by DOP Sue Smith. And it was a black and white film, so I was like, oh, we'll just use that because it's free. And I can say Betty Davis, but I can't use Betty Davis a film because it would not be free. It'd be very expensive.
Well, no, because there are some free films that are in the general populace. I'm like, did he get one of those early 1934 Betty Davis films? Because they are existing. I've seen them.
Yeah, well, it was just easier to use Susie's film anyway.
Oh, that's funny. Because I'm like, oh, okay. And that's where we're introduced to our other main character, I guess, at that point, when he's sitting down doing his thing in the room.
Yeah, Lavender, yeah.
Yes. I have a question. I don't want to ruin your premise of your film, so I'm going to work around this as much as I can, just so you know. Do you know people in this, or it just sort of came to you?
Everyone in this film is my friend. Every single actor, pretty much, except for a couple of them. I didn't know, but I've worked with all of them for pretty much about 15 years.
Okay, I don't want to blurt out your premise of your film, but the little party they're having, where did that come from, is what I'm getting at.
Well, strange enough, that is sort of based on a friend of mine.
I knew it.
Who is a film director as well. I won't name him on this, but yeah, he came to me one day with a little bag with a map in it, and he was walking kind of funny. And I was like, what are you doing? Where are you off to? And he goes, oh, I just got invited to a sex party. I'm like, oh, really? Okay. Tell me more. And so he told me this really long story about how he got invited randomly to a sex party by a friend, and how he had all these things he had to go through to be allowed to go. And then he reported back later. and I won't go into those details. But yeah, it really amused me. It was just so offhand the way he did it, and I'd also seen this program about these people holding these kind of parties in big houses around Britain, around stuff. And I thought, oh, well, that's an interesting use of an old house.
I thought it was fascinating. It made me laugh so hard.
Good. Yeah, that's the aim.
I think he said the guy. I should have wrote down their character names. I apologize. Why is this guy so broke? I know he broke up with his girlfriend.
Well, he got made redundant, so he basically he's basically depressed. You know, he's kind of put his money into this relationship with his girlfriend. So, like the refurbishments that I sort of mentioned, and he's, you know, he's trying to invent a life, well, trying to maintain a life for himself that ultimately isn't worth it because he gives up his own personality to do it. And so he kind of comes out of it, not necessarily broke, he just doesn't know what to do with himself, I guess, and he hasn't got enough money to buy a place. He hasn't saved any money, he hasn't got a job, so he kind of just moves into a place that he thinks is going to be empty and peaceful, but is the exact opposite.
I thought maybe he was broke because when he's there, he takes Lavender's wine and stuff, and Lavender just derails him for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, yeah, he definitely hasn't got much money. I think that's also just an opportunistic moment of he's kind of not gone shopping, and he lacks any kind of drive, any motivation to do anything, and the only things he's got is a bag of pasta and a tin of tomatoes.
Yeah, you know, that's about it.
So he sees the little bit of wine there, a couple of olives, and he's like, "This will change everything. This will change my meal for the better." It's a mini metaphor, I suppose, for the film.
Well, that's great. I have to ask about the wedding ring. You know that.
Uh huh.
What is that? It can't be real. But whose ring is it, really?
Well, in the film, it is.
Whose it is, but in reality, where's the prop come from?
The prop came from a shop called Argos, which is just like a catalogue shop. So we've got two rings for £6 each, and we just use those. It's actually based on my fiance's wedding ring.
Oh,
they look exactly the same, except hers was worth a lot of money, and those two that we used weren't. So, yeah, they are just prop rings.
Okay, I always have to ask, red wine or fake wine?
Sadly, it was fake. Our first AD would not let us have booze on set at all. So I had to hide cans of beer around the set so I could get through the day. And the wine at the end in a scene, which I won't go into to give anything away, but yeah, the wine that's drunk at the end is also a fake wine.
Oh,
because even David, the actor, can definitely take a drink. He wasn't. Yeah, we weren't allowed. First AD was very adamant.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
It looks like a really fun thing. Where did you come up with the shower scene?
Yeah, that's a weird one. I've just got a disgusting sense of humor in those kind of things. But again, it's also sort of based on a mild experience I had with a person that I went on a holiday with. It's kind of a business holiday, and we didn't know each other that well. And he assumed a lot. You know, so he was the type of person who would just kind of walk around naked. We were having to share a room in like a hostel, and he'd come in from his shower and he'd just whip off his towel and be naked. And I was like, oh God, you have overstepped the boundaries here of our friendship, because we barely know each other. And yes, I don't want to see that. And it amuses me. It's one of those things that amuses me, that people just kind of assume a lot about another person and how their boundaries are this way and someone else's boundaries are not the same, you know.
Wow. Okay, that makes a lot more sense to me now. Oh, an urban fox. What's an urban fox?
Well, I'm sure you must. I mean, I suppose you get wild foxes a lot more in Canada.
Doesn't exist. I wrote it down. Does an urban fox exist?
Yes, it does. Yeah. I mean, in London, they're everywhere.
Foxes, oh, really?
Everywhere.
No.
So, I live, like, just outside central London, and there's foxes just everywhere. I mean, one time I was living in a nice little part of London, in no way a countryside area, and I come home one day, and my flatmate is feeding a fox in our kitchen. And he'd enticed it in, because they were just always there. They were just always around, and one day, he decided to bring it into the house and feed it, and I was like, no. Now get it out. Get it out now. It's a fortune. They are not pets. They are essentially, you know, as I say, giant ginger rats.
So you come
I mean, in. I like them. I don't want them to die, but I don't want them in my kitchen either.
So are there really people coming to people's houses in England to save the urban fox?
Yeah, I mean, anyway, there's a, I get a lot of people on the streets. We call them chuggers, you know, like charity chuggers.
Chuggers.
Yeah, they're called
charity
muggers. It's, yeah, it's a truncation of that. But yeah, charity muggers who will come up to you and, you know, block you on the street and say, would you like to donate to this? Would you like to donate to that? And generally I say no. And you get the odd ones, you get the strange ones who are very kind of militantly sort of, I know a lot of vegans, and they're generally fine. So I just exaggerate it to this sort of middle-class woman who's fairly bored and wanting to, you know, show off to her friends that she was doing something for the public, for the area.
Well, it made me laugh because I had never heard of an urban fox in my life. So I thought it was very funny.
They are rife in England.
No.
Everywhere.
They would get eaten. We have foxes in my neighborhood, but I've seen one in 10, 15 years. One.
Oh, and I've seen, what, three this week?
Oh, no, I live out in the suburbs, but I mean, we have deer. I see deer every once in a while.
Well, we don't see deer. We have no deer in London, really, except a couple of parks, but they're not even wild. They are kind of put there.
Oh,
we have hundreds and hundreds of foxes. Foxes, oh, no. Rats.
No rats. I'm talking you're driving down the road and a deer will run out in front of you.
Well, no, we don't get that. Foxes. I saw a fox get hit by a car like not so long ago. It was horrible. Because we had to call the RSPCA to come and pick it up because it was still alive.
Ooh.
It just had its legs were broken or something. It's horrible. But yeah, they're everywhere. Absolutely everywhere.
I don't know why I've discussed the end of the film because I'm trying very hard, but one line surprised me. You jump from bacon to ball slicing. So I made a note about that. I have to ask about bacon to ball slicing.
Everyone liked that line. It's it's just a kind of, you know, this is a low budget film and we had very little available to us in the ways of, without giving too much away, within the ways of special effects or abilities to cause people pain whilst, being health and safety. So I decided bacon was a good way of torture. And, it's just about certain people deciding to, you know, thinking they're more than they are and making a leap that is ahead of where they should be, I guess, you know. So it's like these villains who are not really that good at what they do, you know.
How do you plan on promoting the film? Twitter, Amazon?
Yeah, we've got everything, really. So promotion-wise, yeah, we've got all the social media stuff. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. Our film company is, anyway.
Oh, okay. I'm like, weird, Instagram. I've never been on I do have an Instagram account. I haven't used it in years.
It's good for pictures.
Yeah, that's why I kind of gave up.
And, and then we've just been doing a lot of local radio, local press at the moment. We're kind of starting small and then building outwards. So we've just done our first big TV interview last week, just before the premiere. We did London Live, which is the London-based sort of news channel that has all the kind of cultural stuff on it. So that was our first kind of foray into a sizable thing. And then hopefully we're going to be doing, you know, some more London-based radio. And then once we're going to take the film on tour. And so we're going to take it all around Britain. So like Edinburgh, Glasgow, Manchester, Liverpool, Brighton. And we're going to be doing like lots of local press around those areas as well. And then hopefully national. If it takes off, we'll do some proper national press.
That's awesome. So you're going to go to the Edinburgh Film Fest and all these other film festivals then?
No. I mean, we're doing some festivals, definitely. But no, there's a company called Our Screen who you don't seem to have much in America or Canada for this kind of thing, but it just makes it possible to get your film into cinemas because obviously this day and age, unless you're Marvel, James Bond or whatever, you know, you aren't getting into cinemas. And Our Screen is a thing. It's kind of like socialist cinema. Their hashtag is people powered cinema. So basically a cinema will do a deal with Our Screen for almost no money. Well, I don't have to pay anything. And as long as we get a certain amount of people to book tickets, then we can have the cinema for free.
Can I ask some more questions about that?
Yes.
I've never heard of this. How many people does it take to get a cinema for free?
It's different for each cinema. So, like, the West End one we did, that we needed, it was 120-seater, and we needed 47 people to book.
So almost 50% then.
So in that case, yeah. But then the one I did in the East End, which was a much bigger cinema, was like 160 seats, and we only needed 35.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's dependent, because one was a multiplex and one was an independent cinema. So the independent cinemas require less, it seems. And so, yeah, but we obviously sold out all three. So in the end, it all worked out very well.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. We have nothing like that here that I've ever heard of.
It's only a matter of time, because it's the way forward. It's been amazing. It means we can go all over the country now, and it won't cost us anything. In fact, we'll make money.
I think that's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
That's absolutely fabulous. How did you fund your project?
Basically, it was almost free. I mean, I just worked with a lot of people over the years who, you know, the actors all came in for virtually nothing, because they're my friends and they're brilliant actors, classically trained. You know, I mean, David, who plays Lavender, he was in drama school with Tom Hardy.
I can believe it.
Yeah, Michael Fassbender. They all went to the same drama school together. So basically mostly it was done with favors. And a bit of insurance here, a bit of food, and we paid a few people, like, expenses, or, you know, just so they could take some time off work. But really it was self-funded pretty much entirely, and just done on innovation and favors.
Maybe this is a weird question. Since you filmed in your own house, did you cook for them?
No, that was the biggest expense, paying for the food. I can hear my daughter crying.
Talking about the food?
Oh, yeah. So basically, yeah, I mean, that was one of the biggest expenses, was feeding the cast and crew decent food, and not having to cook it ourselves. I mean, we cooked it on our short films. We just cook it ourselves, or we'd go and get pizzas from like a cheap shop or whatever. But we thought, no, this is going to be 14, 15 hour days, and, you know, late at night, early in the morning. So we needed proper food, and so we did spend some money on that.
Well, that
was a good deal.
That was very nice of you. I'm a beer snob, and I was fully willing to admit that. So I have to ask you what beer you were drinking on set.
Oh God, yeah, I'm not a snob. I was just hoping for the best. I'd send the runner over to the shop and say, "Here's £4. Get me what you can."
Oh my God, I'd lose it. I couldn't handle that.
It would probably be Beck's, maybe Cronenberg or something like that. You know?
I don't mind. Okay, that's not bad beer.
It's not good beer. Beck's is nice. Cronenberg's rubbish.
Yeah, Cronenberg's not bad on draft here. We don't get it often. It's hard to find here on draft.
It's good. If you go to France, Cronenberg is great. England, it's not good.
I know. Here it's not bad. It's not great. Okay. Now it's time for your favorite part of the show. It's fun question time.
Excellent.
Really easy questions. Well, nobody tells me they're easy, but I think they are. favorite film?
The Crow.
Wow, how old are you to like The Crow that much?
It was the first 18, or R-rated, I guess, or something, for you lot, that I ever saw. So I was like 14, I think, when I saw that, or something like that.
Yeah, because, I mean, I know you're younger than me, so I'm like, okay, The Crow. I love The Crow. I have the beautiful soundtrack.
Yeah, it's the best soundtrack ever. It's just amazing. I got into, like, heavy metal and all that kind of stuff really young. My cousin Rachel took me aside one day and said, "Listen to this." And she played me Iron Maiden and AC/DC and Black Sabbath and everything when I was like 7 years old. And so I was kind of into all that kind of stuff. And then The Crow came along, and it kind of, I love comics as long done. And so it kind of really just ticked every single box, the best music, all of my revenge fantasies that I was having as a teenager. And it was just, yeah, best thing ever.
That's awesome.
I still love it.
That's a great answer. That's a perfect. Did you watch the sequels or no?
I've seen two out of the three sequels. Both of them were terrible.
I've seen them all.
I haven't seen the Edward Furlong one. I saw the Eric Mabius one, and I saw the the Vincent Perez one.
I've seen them all. They're all terrible.
Yeah. I'm intrigued by the reboot because I quite like the director.
So do I.
But and Jason Momoa, he's pretty cool, but I just don't know if he's too much man, you know.
I think he is. I don't know, that whole goth thing with the crow, it was just an experience. He kind of had to be there.
Yeah. I mean, Alex Proyas was putting out a thing the other day saying, don't do it, don't remake it.
I don't want to.
I think you should. They can do it like another version of it, fine and dandy, but I don't think they should remake the original. I think it's just pointless. There's so many versions of it in the comics, so why bother?
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. Good answer. It's Friday night. Got some people over. What film do you put on?
This is
my favorite question because I get some great answers for it. So,
being an Englishman, it's usually, I would say, a Monty Python film or with Neil and I.
Sorry, I didn't catch the last part.
I know. No, I can't even say it. With Neil and I.
I don't know that.
It's been voted by the BFI as the second best British comedy of all time.
What's number one then?
Life of Brian.
Oh, it is the best. Okay. That would be one of my choices. I'd put on Life of Brian, for sure I would.
Yeah, Life of Brian, The Holy Grail, Meaning of Life, any Python film is always a good one to stick on.
Meaning of Life's a little different. I like Life of Brian because it makes me laugh so hard.
Meaning of Life's got some of my favorite moments of any Python film ever, though. Because it's so crazy. It's such a bizarre film.
It's insane. Well, how about something completely different? That guy getting blown up in the hedges just cracks me up every time I watch that film.
it's just when they all get killed by salmon moose.
Yes.
Just the guy with no leg in the Civil War, you know. It's just, you know, a tiger in Africa.
Is Meaning of Life when the guy has to eat the cracker and explodes?
Mr. Creosote, yes.
Yes. Oh, yes. I remember as a kid, we must have watched that scene 50 times.
Is it worth a thin mint?
Yes. Yeah. I couldn't do it. Oh, yeah. I love it. Well, the last question's really easy then. You've got through the hard ones. What do you get at the cinema to eat at the concession stand?
I don't. I never eat in the cinema because I hate people that make noise in the cinema. I'm a cinema Nazi.
Oh, wow.
When I was younger in university, I designed a completely fascist cinema of with like gun turrets and everything for people that talked. So people would get electrocuted or they'd get shot or they'd, you know, I tried everywhere in my brain to. I've actually written a whole section of a film based around someone's revenge fantasies of people talking in the cinema, and it's kind of like that scene in Blade 2 where he's just him and all the vampires are swarming on him, and he's just shooting everybody. That was me as a younger man with cinemas. So I don't eat in the cinema because, yeah, I can't stand the noise.
I have to agree with you 100% on some of those levels. I have a question though. You go to a little, you have kids, or you have a kid already.
I do, yes.
When you go to the cinema, what are you going to do? Because you got to sit through all those cartoon movies.
She's great in the cinema so far, and we've been to see some good films. You know, Moana, I liked that. I thought that was good.
Moana's got great songs.
I was very proud of her, though. We went and saw the Trolls movie.
Oh.
And she walked out.
Oh, smart, you know, kid.
She wasn't even three, and she's like, Daddy, we go home now. And I was like, yes, we will. This is an offense to the senses, this film.
Oh, I agree. It was terrible.
I hated it, yeah. And she hated it, too, so I was very proud of her. You know, she sat through Moana. The other day, she sat through Willy Wonka.
Which one? And
the Wizard of Oz. The Gene Wilder one, definitely.
I have to ask.
No, the Johnny Depp one's not very good.
Okay. Well, you got to tell everybody where to find your film.
Right now, it's a bit difficult to say, to be honest, because we're taking it on tour, like I said, so it's not going to be released anywhere, really, until it's probably like the end of the summer.
Okay.
Where hopefully then it'll be on Amazon. It's probably going to be on... We're doing negotiations with several VOD platforms, so I can't really announce anything yet, because it's nothing concrete. But we are doing... If you're in San Diego, on March 31st, we will be showing it in San Diego as part of a special screening.
That's awesome.
by my festival friends out there. They're cool people who like the film, and they run a brilliant horror festival called Horrible Imaginings. And obviously Guardians is not horror, but they wanted to show it, so they do a monthly screening in San Diego, and they're going to show it there as part of their yearly thing. So March 31st, San Diego.
Perfect. Well, thank you for your time. You're being a great guest.
Thank you very much.
And I love the stories.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.